President Obama has pledged that the United States will accept at least 10,000 Syrian refugees in the next fiscal year to help alleviate the migrant crisis in Europe. Some Republican presidential candidates, including Governor Scott Walker, insist the U.S. should not take in any refugees, while House Democrats urge the Obama administration to allow more than 100,000 to enter the country. How would you like to see the United States respond to the Syrian refugee crisis? That's today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 16th. We will welcome in a guest foreign policy expert to discuss the situation and invite your questions and your views on this. How should America respond to the Syrian refugee crisis? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Jeremy Suri. He is the Mac Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs, History, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin, the LBJ School of Public Affairs, and the Strauss Center for International Security and Law. He has written many books, including Foreign Policy Breakthroughs, Cases in Successful Diplomacy, which came out in August. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, before we get into the varying opinions out there on how the U.S. should approach this situation, give us some context. Help us understand what's going on. Syrians have been fleeing their country since civil war broke out some years ago. Why all of a sudden is this a front page story?
Well, it's a front page story, Joy, right now for two reasons. First, the numbers have increased significantly as the Syrian government under Bashar Assad has significantly weakened and has increased both the level of its own use of military force and has faced crumbling political power and authority in many areas. And so the level of violence within Syria, which was already at a very high level, has increased. I mean, this is a terribly brutal civil war with more than 200,000 deaths already. So that's one part, just the level of killing has increased. And second, what you've seen happen is the rise of ISIS, which has not only created a problem of a civil war, also a problem of what happens after the civil war in areas that have been freed of violence but are now under the control of this incredibly brutal regime, which you could say is even more violent than the civil war elements themselves. So people in the region are finding that they don't have a safe haven of any kind, and you're seeing larger and larger numbers moving to places they can find safety.
Any idea how large the numbers are?
Well, the estimates are hard to believe, actually, but the standard estimate that you'll see among experts is it's about 4 million people, which is an incredibly large number and will likely only increase.
Yeah, and we did all have our hearts break when we saw that photo of that three-year-old boy washed ashore on a Turkish beach. What did that got us all talking about it, didn't it?
Well, it did. I mean, so you could argue that this has been a refugee crisis for more than 2 years now, but that it's finally coming to the Western consciousness in part because of photos like that. And in part because Jordan is running out of space. The country of Jordan, which of course borders Syria, for the first year and a half of the civil war was taking in the vast majority of these immigrants. By some estimates, you have almost half the population of Jordan, which is now immigrants from Syria. So that was happening. We weren't seeing it, though. And these photos that have now come onto our newspapers and our television screens from the immigrants trying to come into Europe, and especially children dying in the process, those are indeed heart-rending photos, and they do get our attention.
Well, so obviously that's it's very sad. How serious a situation is this?
I think it's incredibly serious for three reasons. First of all, it's only going to get worse before it gets better. What we're seeing is crumbling authority and increasing violence, not just in Syria, but in that entire region, in Iraq as well, where we ourselves were fighting for a long time and had our soldiers. And as political authority crumbles and you see escalating civil war, you're going to see more people moving. That's the first reason it's serious. Second is the numbers are incredibly large. If it's anywhere near 4 million people and even a third of those try to come to Europe and the United States, that's quite a large number. And then the third reason is what happens even if we do settle them somewhere, the immigrants, what happens then? How do we deal with the problems of assimilation and reconstructing their lives in so many societies? So it's a real big long-term problem, as big as any problem we have in the world today.
Yeah. So of the 4 million, the U.S. has taken in about 1,500 Syrian refugees. Why that small a number?
Well, it's very hard to get into the United States. Mm-hmm. We're a country of immigrants, but we make it very hard for immigrants to get into our country. That's not particularly new to this moment. This has been actually the case historically. We have favored, when we do allow large numbers of immigrants in, we've historically favored people from particular regions, especially Europe, and we have favored people who have degrees and skills that are employable. So it's easier to get in as a PhD or a computer engineer than it is someone without a degree in one of those fields. So we have not taken in very many simply because our existing laws on the books make it very hard for immigrants to come into the United States.
Yeah, President Obama announced last week that the U.S. Would take in 10,000 more refugees in the next fiscal year, beginning October 1st. In terms of sheer numbers, what's your reaction to Obama's pledge?
Well, it's on the one hand, it's a bold pledge because, as you said in the opening to your show, there are many, many prominent politicians who are opposed to taking in any immigrants at all, including the governor of Wisconsin right now. And there are many members of Congress who are opposed to this. So it's, in that sense, it's a bold move by the president. In another sense, though, it's pathetic. If you have 4 million immigrants and a country like Germany is taking in 500,000, the fact that we're only taking in 10,000, or it'll be 10,000 plus 1,500, so 11,500, that's a very, very small number considering the scale of the humanitarian crisis. And also, if I might say, considering the scale of American military activity in the Middle East over the last decade, we are not innocent of this problem. We are part of what has been going on. We've been trying to make it better, but we are part of the issue here. And for us just to say we're only going to take a very small proportion, from a historian's point of view, that looks incredibly isolationist, I must say.
72 House Democrats, including U.S. Representative Mark Pocan of Madison, are urging Obama to open the doors to as many as 100,000 refugees. They say that we have a moral duty to help those in desperate turmoil. Does America have a moral duty to take in more refugees?
Well, I don't know if we have a moral duty. I would make the case that we should take in more immigrants because we want this problem to be solved, first of all, because we care about stability in the Middle East, because a increasing civil war context is going to not only undermine our economic interests in the region, but also, again, create the foundation for more of the terrorist activity that brought us into the region in the first place. That's why ISIS is so worrisome to us. And if we want other countries to take in some of these immigrants, we have to do that as well. We have to play our part. So there's a very practical reason. Then beyond that, I think there's a humanitarian reason as well. I don't know if it's a moral duty. But if we want a world that's safer and where people are treated more humanely, we need to play our part as well. We can't just tell other countries to do that. So I would argue there's a humane reason and a pragmatic reason, and those are good enough reasons to do something.
Yet, as we mentioned, not only Governor Scott Walker, but others in the Republican presidential field, John Kasich, Mike Huckabee, Rand Paul, Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, have all raised concerns about security, saying that terrorists may use the crisis to get into the U.S. How big a threat is that?
I think terrorism remains somewhat of a threat, but this is unrelated to this issue. This is combining issues that are unrelated to one another. We have an established screening process for dealing with refugees, and the safest way to make sure that refugees who come into the United States are not bringing criminal behavior into the United States is to set up a legal process a process of legal oversight that allows people a pathway to citizenship. When you don't do that, people come in, they sneak in, they come in illegally, and then you have less regulatory control over them. So the best way to do this is to make it legal so we can actually do the kinds of checks and monitoring that would be necessary. If people are coming in secretly, then it's harder to monitor them.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Jeremy Suri, who is a professor of history and public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. And he used to teach at UW-Madison. He's talking with us about the European migrant crisis, the Syrian refugees who are fleeing civil war in Syria, trying to relocate and find some sort of safe haven in Europe. We're asking, how many Syrian refugees should the U.S. take in? President Obama says 10,000. House Democrats say at least 100,000. Governor Scott Walker and other Republicans say zero. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Would you like to see the U.S. respond to the Syrian refugee crisis? That's today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You will see our big question posted online at WPR.org/Joy. It's also linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We invite you to vote in that online poll, where we ask you whether you think, which approach you think the U.S. should take. Should we follow President Obama's plan to take in 10,000 refugees? Should we follow Governor Walker's proposal to not accept any more refugees at all? Or should we follow the House Democrats' idea to resettle 100,000 migrants? Or not sure. Those are your choices online, but you can also join us on air at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Jeremy Suri. He is the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs, History, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. And we before we go to the phones, we do have a number of callers, but before we go to the phones, let me ask you about Governor Walker saying that the U.S. should not take in any more Syrian refugees. He says the way to deal with this crisis is to take down the Islamic State. How viable is that solution, Jeremy Suri?
Well, it's a very misguided statement, I'm sorry to say, because more military action against the Islamic State, whether that should be done or not, I tend to think there might be an argument for that, is only going to create more refugees and more migrants. And a continued effort on our part to tell people in the region to fight the Islamic State while we continue to brutally keep them out of our societies is only going to make us look like an uncredible ally. The best way to bring down the Islamic State is to provide assistance to people in the region who are fighting the Islamic State, and to provide assistance to their families and others who are trying to temporarily get out of the region. That's the only way. If we are more humane and more helpful, we will have more people to help us in the region. If we try to close our walls and close our borders, we'll only face more resistance and more violence. And the history of this for that region and other regions is pretty clear on this. So if you want to fight the Islamic State, you actually have to address the immigration crisis. You can't pretend it doesn't exist.
Craig in Onalaska is with us. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. My question is, why isn't the United Nations involved? The U.S. spends an awful lot of money every year with the United Nations. Seems to me that pressure should be brought by the U.N. to force basically an end to the Assad regime, either by threatening military action of a coalition of countries, or basically, the United Nations is not an organization that has any teeth.
It's a great point by Craig. I agree with you. The United Nations should be involved in both addressing the civil war and addressing the migration crisis here. There's a very simple and unfortunate reason why the United Nations is not involved, and that's because Russia is vetoing any United Nations activity or threatening to veto it. The Russian government under Vladimir Putin is trying to prop up the Assad regime, and they do not want to see the United Nations in the region. And as you, I'm sure, know, the Russian government is increasing its aid to Assad as we speak.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about how concerning that is. Secretary of State John Kerry apparently has made his third phone call to his Russian counterparts in the past few days, seeking to clarify the intent of Moscow's military buildup in Syria. Kerry warning that continued support for President Assad will only prolong the Syrian conflict.
Well, that's what's happened. Russia is providing support to Assad and increasing its support, in part because he's their only real ally left in the region. And as people sometimes forget, it is a major area of Russian military activity, not just for Syria, but for the larger region. This is the last Russian military base in the region, the Tartus base, and they have an air facility there as well. This provides them access to the Mediterranean, obviously, and the Persian Gulf. And so they have a strategic interest in the region, and Assad is their longtime ally. Their fear, the Russian fear, is that when Assad goes, American and Western influence will increase, which is accurate. But nonetheless, the Russians are prolonging the conflict by prolonging the Assad regime.
Assad says he's blaming Europe for this migration crisis, saying it's a direct result of the West's support for extremists in Syria over the past 4 years. In an interview with Russian media, Assad accused Europe of supporting terrorism and providing protection for terrorists, calling them moderates. "If you are worried about them, the refugees, stop supporting terrorists," he said. What about that?
Well, the Europeans and the Americans have never supported terrorists in the region. We have done some things that have perhaps indirectly helped terrorist activities, and we should be held accountable for that. And some of what we did in Iraq and elsewhere is part of the problem. But American and European policy in Syria has from the start been for Assad to go and for a new government to be formed, a government made up not of terrorists but made up of other groups in Syria who have for quite some time now opposed the Assad regime but are not necessarily terrorists. The fact that Assad has not agreed to any kind of replacement government for him has created a polarized situation, where some people are fighting for Assad because they see no alternative, and others, more and more numbers, are moving to the ISIS, Islamic State side, because they see no alternative. What we've lost is the middle, that group of anti-Assad forces who were also anti-terrorist. They weren't necessarily pro-American, but they were anti-Assad and anti-terrorist about 3 years ago, and they've mostly been killed off or forced to choose sides.
Let's go to John in Madison next. Hi, John.
Hello. Well, I think I agree with Representative Pocan and the Democratic Party that we should take 100,000 refugees. We are a combatant in a civil war. The civil war has been going on for 4 years. We've been there for a year. We have flown over 3,000 air missions. We've used cruise missiles. We've used drones to fight the Islamic State, because we're also reinvolved in Iraq. And I don't think there's going to be any resolution of this problem unless we decide to negotiate not only with Assad, but also with Putin as a responsible representative, and try to get some type of provisional government. But I think it's going to also involve the Islamic State, whether we like it or not. And it's going to have to be the same kind of realpolitik that we're going to eventually have to apply in Afghanistan and negotiate with the Taliban.
Jeremy Suri?
Well, so first, I agree with John that we should take in more migrants. I think we're going to have to. And I also agree with him that we should be negotiating with all the parties to create a provisional state. That has been the American and the European Union position from the start. The problem has been that the Russians and the Iranians and Assad have not agreed to this. And the Russians have been the key veto player here. Now, I'm not sure we should be negotiating with the leaders of the Islamic State, but where I agree with John is that the Islamic State involves many, many different groups, just as the Taliban in Afghanistan does. And we should try to find those groups that we think we can negotiate with that would be willing to go along with a provisional government of one kind or another, and I think we could do that. So I think his point about realpolitik is very well taken.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Jeremy Suri, about today's big question: how many Syrian refugees should the U.S. take in? 10,000 as pledged by President Obama, as many as 100,000 as recommended by House Democrats, including U.S. Representative Mark Pocan of Madison, or zero, no more, as proposed by Governor Scott Walker, who has said the U.S. should not take in any more migrants and that instead should focus on defeating the Islamic State to solve the crisis. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Carlos on Facebook asks, how many refugees is Saudi Arabia accepting? Well, what about is Saudi Arabia accepting, and what's the significance of that question?
Well, that's a very astute question. I don't know the number that Saudi Arabia is accepting, but it's probably not very many. And that's a very good question because the Saudi government, first of all, is a very strong supporter of the opposition to Assad. The Saudi government is a major player in the region, and they have resources. It's a wealthy government, even if it's still a poor society. And generally, though, they are a society that does not take in immigrants, because they are concerned about their own social stability, and that's something that should probably change as well. I don't know, though, how many they're taking in, but I'm sure it's far less than the number going to Europe.
Yeah, other countries have taken in many refugees. Turkey is at 1.9 million, Jordan 1.4 million, Lebanon 1.1 million, Germany may take in 800,000. Why are those countries taking in so many more refugees than the U.S.?
Well, the Jordanians don't really have a choice. They're on the border. And one thing we've learned in the last decade is that with all of the modern technology and all of the modern military forces, it's still very hard to control people who want to move across a border. And we find that with our own borders as well. And so many of the countries in the region have not had much of a choice, and they also have very sympathetic populations toward those who are stuck in these absolutely horrific conditions. These are their brothers and sisters and cousins, and they want to help them. So there are humanitarian impulses as well as pragmatic impulses, but these societies, particularly Jordan, that are around Syria, are just oversaturated now. And if you want to create terrorism, terrorism does nurture in these refugee camps, which exist often in these border areas where you have people living in horrible conditions, and they become a basis of a space for terrorists to recruit. If we want to avoid terrorism, we need to resettle migrants in more productive and comfortable living conditions so they do not become recruits for terrorist activities.
Let's go next to Dave in Madison. Hello, Dave.
Yes, hello. I think that the what's happening now reminds me of what happened in the 30s to Jewish people where they were trying to escape Germany. And there were government officials who said, don't take any Jews in, and there were people like Raoul Wallenberg who helped 100,000 escape. And I wish that our own leaders would take into account, you know, some of their horrific history, and that that might come into play.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Suri?
Well, Dave, I think you're right. I think the 1930s only represent one of many examples of populations in different parts of the world facing genocidal behavior and other horrific conditions, and wealthy countries not wanting to take them in. And that's a long strain in our own history. The complexity of American history is that we're a society of immigrants, but we're also a society with long-standing anti-immigrant attitudes and anti-immigrant laws. And it takes a long time to learn these lessons. And the problem is people are scared. And it's unfortunately easy for politicians and others to raise fears and just, you know, assume that those coming from abroad are inferior or racially inferior or are somehow terrorists of one kind or another, neither of which is true. There's one thing we know, that American society has always benefited from immigrants. One of the things that keeps us a dynamic society is that we have young talent coming in. So we should, as you said, and you implied, we should be much more humanitarian about this, and we should be much more pragmatic and look to become a place for Syrian immigrants who want to resettle and make new lives for themselves.
Let's go to Kathy in Barron. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I guess my comment is, or kind of a question, is wouldn't we rather have, you know, take in more people and make them allies, make them loyal to us, than having them sit overseas and hate us for not helping when we've been a great part of it? And I can take my answer off the air.
Oh, so we'd be better off creating allies by taking in refugees, Jeremy Suri?
Well, Kathy raises a really important point, and it relates back to our discussion of how we combat ISIS and other groups, the Islamic State and others that are doing horrible things. If we don't let people in and we continue to build walls to keep them out, it reinforces a very negative image of the United States as a group of rich, fat people who tell the world what to do and don't let anyone come into our society. And that image makes it harder to build alliances. Kathy's point is right on. If we want people in other parts of the world to respect us and work with us, we have to open our doors to them. And that is what has worked in the past. Why do we have such strong relations with our European allies? It's because so many of them have relatives who live in the United States and people who came over to our country. Germans see us, many Germans, as a savior society for many in their population who fled in the 1930s. That's how you build alliances in the long run. And if you build walls, you're building enemies, not alliances.
Ed on Facebook says, no migrants in the U.S. Figure that at least 10% of them are terrorists trying to get in. We're just inviting more trouble.
There's no factual basis to any kind of claim that 10% of immigrants are terrorists or anything like that. And again, historically, immigrant groups have been the source of dynamism, innovation, and change in our society. We all know the stories of immigrants who come and become members of the U.S. military, who become major business figures, intellectual and academic figures. There'd be no University of Wisconsin without all the great immigrant intellectuals who came in the early 20th century. So to say 10% are terrorists is totally off base.
Chris in Sauk City is with us. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for the call. The question I have, well, first of all, I do agree that we should be bringing in more immigrants than 10,000. That seems like a low number. But the question I have is, what's the process that the U.S. government takes just to secure that the people we are bringing in aren't part of ISIS? You know, is it background checks, or what is it that we're actually doing to secure that the people that come in, you know, are you know, just refugees and not people just trying to get into our country?
So there is an elaborate process, if it's done legally, of not just background checks, but of actually monitoring people as they first come into the country, of assessing whether they match this extensive terrorist database and all sorts of other things that have been created in the wake of 9/11. It's not a perfect system, but it's a far better monitoring system than just, you know, pretending the border is closed and letting people sneak in. The best thing we do to monitor immigrants is we monitor them through the IRS, through their tax payments. They pay taxes. So if we bring immigrants in from Syria, many of whom are well-educated, by the way, and we help them get resettled and get jobs, we monitor their activities through the IRS the same way you and I are monitored. What are they doing with their income? Where is their money going? Where are they going? Where do they live? The best way to monitor someone is to give them a taxpayer ID number and have them pay taxes, and you have to make them legal for that to happen.
Bill emails, could your guest clarify the large difference between refugee and immigrant, a common misunderstanding when we hear about our southern border? We have just a minute before our news break.
So a refugee traditionally is someone fleeing political mistreatment, someone who is a victim of political mistreatment, and an immigrant is often someone who's looking for economic opportunity. The Syrians are obviously, they're both, but they're particularly refugees because they are fleeing a terrible military political environment.
Jeremy Suri is our guest. He is the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs, History, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin, the LBJ School of Public Affairs, and the Strauss Center for International Security and Law. He formerly taught history at UW-Madison. He's written several books, including Foreign Policy Breakthroughs, Cases in Successful Diplomacy, which came out in August. He is talking with us about the migrant crisis in Europe and the Syrian refugees. How many should Syrian refugees should the U.S. take in? That's our big question. Should it be 10,000 as proposed by President Obama, or 100,000 as proposed by House Democrats, or none as proposed by Governor Walker and other Republican presidential candidates? We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. Should the U.S. take in Syrian refugees who are fleeing the civil war in their country and trying to find safe haven? That's today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. President Obama says, yes, he would like the U.S. to accept 10,000 Syrian refugees in the next fiscal year. House Democrats, including Madison's Mark Pocan, say the U.S. should take in far more, as many as 100,000 Syrian refugees. Some Republican presidential candidates, including Governor Scott Walker, say the U.S. should not take in any and instead should concentrate on defeating the Islamic State to solve the crisis. We are talking about the issue with a foreign policy expert, Jeremy Suri, welcoming your questions for him about what's going on. And we will, at the end of the hour, have a sound off and give you an opportunity to answer today's big question. That's coming up at the end of the hour. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And you can find our online poll on Facebook and at wpr.org/joy. We have Roy on Facebook who says, we should take in quotation marks, the homeless and hungry that we have here. I think saying that we have enough problems with homeless and hungry and desperate people in our own country. Talk some, if you will, Jeremy Suri, on what this would mean for the United States economically if we took in 100,000 or more Syrian refugees.
Well, there's no doubt there are costs to this. It costs money to resettle people. It costs money for job training, for schools. On the other hand, there are some huge net benefits. Many of the Syrian refugees are well-educated people. They bring lots of skills. They also bring an international outlook with them, and they would add significantly to some of the skill bases in many of our communities. The strange thing about American society today is that we have people, as the caller indicated, who are in situations where they're not being treated as well or are in need of assistance, but we also have many parts of our society that are short on labor. And these Syrian refugees would be an addition to the labor force in many ways, and the skilled labor force, and even the not highly skilled labor force. So there would be costs, but the numbers, even if we get into 100,000 or so, are actually still relatively small. And we shouldn't overstate the cost of that. And it's not an either-or situation. In fact, bringing skilled workers into communities that could use more skilled workers, that helps everyone, not just the refugees.
Next, we go to Charlie in Menasha. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. I constantly hear that, as in this discussion, solving this problem would be getting rid of Assad. The point is, Assad is an Alawite Muslim, which is a sect that believes Christians and Jews and Muslims can live together, and he and his father are personally responsible for protecting the Christians. Assad knows that, and the army is made up primarily of Alawites and Christians, and Assad knows that no matter what government replaces him, the Christians and the Alawites will be slaughtered. And the 300,000 Christians have either been killed or left Syria, and nobody talks about them and what's going to happen to them. Mm-hmm. And so,
well, Jeremy Suri, what's going to happen to them? What's this all about?
Well, so Charlie is absolutely right that Assad is an Alawite, and traditionally, especially Assad's father, Hafez al-Assad, was a coalition ruler in the sense that he was a dictator, but he had the support of various minority groups within Syria, including the Christians and the Alawite sect of the Muslim community. Bashar Assad, his son, has tried to claim he's playing the same role, but he has not. What he has done is actually pursued a pretty vile and sectarian approach to staying in power. And he has defended the Alawites, and the Alawites do remain on his side. But he has not been a defender of the Christians, and much of the violence that he has been responsible for is equally responsible for the forced departure of the Christians. So the sad story is that neither of the two dominant sides, the Islamic State or Assad, are protecting the Christians. If you want to protect the Christians in Syria, those that are left, or you want to allow the Christians to come back to their homes, you need a coalition government, a government that is neither Assad nor the extreme rebels on the other side. And that's actually what the American position has been. But the Russians and the Syrians and the Iranians have not gone along with that.
Pat in Grafton is with us. Hello, Pat.
Hello. I think the United States has a responsibility to lead by example, and since some of our actions have indirectly caused this problem or exacerbated it, I think it's important to take in the refugees and be a good example and be good humanitarians.
So, thank you very much, Pat. Did our actions, the U.S. actions, and what actions cause or exacerbate this, Jeremy Suri?
Absolutely. Our going to war in Iraq contributed to not simply the disruption, maybe worthwhile or not, of the Iraqi government. It not only contributed to that, it contributed to a rise in violence in the region. It contributed to sectarianism. It opened the door to increased Iranian influence in Iraq and Syria. And most significantly, it unsettled established regimes. Now, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we wanted these long-standing dictatorships of Saddam Hussein and the Assad family undermined. But let's recognize that from September 12, 2001 on, our policy moved toward undermining established authoritarian figures in the Middle East, and the civil wars and violence that have followed have been a consequence of our efforts to undermine these dictatorships.
Let's go next to Sarah in Richland Center. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I used to work for the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program in Africa. I've been a refugee interviewer for about 5 years in my professional life. And I think in America, we really lose track of what true need is. And people are really suffering, and I think we can talk about the root causes of the problem all we want, and definitely that has to be taken care of in Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan, every place else. But I feel like we have an obligation as human beings to do this, and we can resettle Muslim populations. We've done it for a number of Somali refugees, and I really support Mark Pocan and the number he's suggesting.
And Sarah says that this needs to happen now, Jeremy Suri.
Well, I think so. I think the crisis is getting worse, and I deeply appreciate Sarah reminding us of the level of deprivation. This is not about simply helping people move somewhere so they can get a job because they're coming from somewhere where they couldn't get a job they liked. It's not simply allowing people to move so they can go to the college they want to go to. This is about saving people's lives and coming back to the point you made earlier, Joy, about the children involved and the images of the children. This is a serious humanitarian issue, and it has serious implications. If you don't allow people in, those from their communities who survive remember, and we will harm our humanitarian image in the world as well as not serving our humanitarian purposes if we don't do something.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is going to happen?
I think there's going to be more and more pressure for the United States to take in more, and I think we'll go from 10,000 to probably a number close to what Representative Pocan has suggested. The Germans will continue to pressure their European allies to take in more. And that I think will definitely happen. I'm hoping that the attention to the refugee issue will also bring more attention to trying to deal with problems on the ground in Syria, and that there'll be a renewed effort to create an alternative government in Syria made up of forces that are not committed to brutalizing that population in the way they are. But that's going to be a long-term process.
Yeah. Is this going to be a big issue in the 2016 presidential race?
Unfortunately, I think it's going to play into the anti-immigrant attitude we're hearing from some candidates. And you're going to hear, I think you're going to hear some racist statements made about who immigrants are and how we need strong leaders who will keep immigrants out and that we should bomb bad guys and keep immigrants out of our society. And those are not viable positions. Those are offensive positions, I think. But we're going to hear more of that. I don't think that that's going to be the U.S. policy for the next president, whoever that is. But unfortunately, this is also a long-standing part of American history. Anti-immigrant sentiment and militaristic language, they play well in elections. They don't play well as policy, but they play well in elections. It should be our obligation as citizens not to support that kind of rhetoric and to educate voters about not simply the humanitarian problems with that rhetoric, the impracticality of it. You cannot run a society by building walls.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jeremy Suri is a foreign policy expert, a chair for leadership in global affairs, history, and public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. Time now for you to sound off on today's big question. How many Syrian refugees should the U.S. take in? 1-800-642-1234. Laura in Milwaukee, what's your answer to the big question?
I would say as many as this country can take. I think 500,000 is what the question asked. I would say more than that.
Thank you very much. We'll give you 30 seconds for you to state your answer to the big question. The options out there, President Obama says 10,000, House Democrats say 100,000, Governor Walker and other Republicans say zero. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We have Mark on Facebook who says we should take in refugees, considering that our actions over there have caused so much of what is going on. We have Steve on Facebook saying we should take at least Obama's 10,000, if not more. There are much easier ways for terrorists to get into the U.S. than by risking life or limb to get out of Syria and crossing the Atlantic Ocean, so that's not a realistic argument. You can continue voting online, which is at WPR.org/joy. It's also linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So far, 50% of you say we should take in 100,000. 24% say 10,000. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.